It is June 1st. Welcome to your Senate Committee on Rules. I would move into work sessions, but as you can see, I don't have a quorum. So as soon as I have a quorum, we'll move into work sessions. So thank you all for your patience. With that, we'll move into public hearing, and we are officially in subcommittee on House Bill 3047. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us a little bit about the bill? And Ms. White, come on up. It's okay. Laughter's a good thing. We probably need more of it around here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3047 directs the Office of Legislative Counsel to prepare legislation that would require use of the phrase individual with disabilities in the Oregon revised statutes in lieu of disabled person or similar terminology.
Ms. Cuneo and Ms. Helvington, why don't you come up with Ms. White? Go ahead.
Senator Brown, my name is Catherine White, and I'm with the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Coalition. And we are here in support of House Bill 3047. We have members of self-advocates as leaders here to talk a little bit about the bill. The bill requires that we start a process with legislative counsel and using people first language, and it establishes a gradual process for changing statutes. The bill is important to adults with disabilities. It's important to families who have young children with disabilities in Oregon, and we urge your support for the bill. We have members of self-advocates as leaders who will talk a little bit about how important it is to use people-first language for people with disabilities. We do have a Dash 1 amendment, and in the Dash 1, it changes the word individuals to persons with disabilities.
All right. Who wants to go first?
Either one.
I'll let Judy do it.
Okay.
I will be giving my computer.
I will be using my communication computer.
Yeah.
I do have coffee.
Yeah.
Chair Brown and members of the committee, my name is Judy Cuneo and I am the self-advocacy coordinator for the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. I also have palsy. I have been involved full-time with self-advocacy for about 10 years. I am here on behalf of the council to encourage you to support HB 3047, which is the respectful language bill. People with disabilities want to be known who they are, not for their disability. The way that many words are used to describe people have a very negative impact. Some words such as retired, crippled, slow learner, and spastic can be very hurtful. We would like to see the words used people with disabilities, people with developmental disabilities, and people who use a wheelchair quote that is what we mean by people first language. Words can prevent the way some people say things are disrespectful. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
My name is Cindy Helmington. I'm the executive director for Self Advocates Leaders, and Self Advocates Leaders, I'm here representing Self Advocates Leaders, and we're an organization of self advocates interested in developing leadership skills and becoming equal partners in policy and legislation. HB 3047 will change the Oregon revised statutes by changing disabled persons and other terminology. Instead, with people first language, such as persons with disabilities, will replace the current language recognized people before their disabilities. The process will occur over prior
We recognize the language may not to change immediately in all policy and laws. However, it is worth the wait to have non-people first language removed from Oregon's laws and policies. Thank you for letting me talk to you, Chair Brown, Senator Brown, and committee.
Thank you. Any questions, Senator Shields?
No. This is amazing. Thank you.
Yeah. We didn't really need you to come testify, but we wanted you to come testify. We'd already made up our minds on the bill. But you guys did a great job. Thank you. We don't have a full committee here yet. We're officially in subcommittee. As soon as we do, we'll move the bill out. So I don't know if you guys want to stay. All right. Thank you. You did a great job. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3047. 25, 24. Let's go in order, I think. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2524. Ms. Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2524A provides for several changes in landlord-tenant statutes. Those changes cover the areas of garnishment of tenants' deposits, cure of the cause of eviction, reasons for landlord denial or rejection of tenants, methamphetamine labs and abandoned property, ex parte review of stipulated agreement hearing requests, and writs of execution.
Mr. Miller, Mr. Van Landingham, do you guys want to come forward? Hi.
Hi, Madam Chair, Senator Shields. Sean Miller, I represent the Oregon Rental Housing Association. Losing my voice, so I will force me to be brief. House Bill 2524 is a product of the Landlord-Tenant Coalition, which is a group that meets in the interim of landlords and tenants that reviews issues in Chapter 90 Landlord-Tenant Law, discusses those issues, and comes up with a consensus product during the legislative session to avoid the fights and fighting it out in your hearing room. We wholeheartedly support House Bill 2524, Madam Chair, and at this point I'll just turn it over to John Van Landingham, who's the legal aid and principal drafter of the bill, to describe the bill.
Thank you, Senator Brown, Senator Shields, John Van Landingham, Lane County Law and Advocacy Center, and Eugene. Sean is the landlord representative of the coalition, and I'm the tenant representative of the coalition. This bill is the product, as Sean said, of a coalition of five landlord groups and three tenant groups. We met 14 times between August and March to draft this bill. This coalition, although different people, has produced a compromise bill every session except 1991 since the early 1980s, and I've been the principal tenant negotiator and draft person since 1993. I've given you a short version and a long version explaining the bill. There are seven substantive provisions in the bill. I'd be glad to go through them, although that would be at your pleasure.
Could you give us a brief overview?
Yes, ma'am. Of the seven issues, the first is garnishment of deposits. Right now, there's nothing in the law that prohibits a creditor from garnishing a security deposit held by a landlord for a debt owed by a tenant. If that happens, the landlord's going to require a new deposit. That creates a bit of a cycle in which the likely result is the landlord loses a tenant, the tenant loses a home. There's a recent series of federal court opinions from the Ninth Circuit which held that security deposits are subject to Oregon's homestead exemption. That's $25,000 for one debtor, $33,000 for two debtors. It's very unlikely that a deposit's going to reach that amount, given that case law, which just was decided last summer at the Ninth Circuit. What we want to do is make that in statute. And with the help of David Hendricks, what we propose to do is make deposits not subject to garnishment so that even if a garnishment does occur, the garnishee, the person holding the money, the landlord, wouldn't have to turn it over. We wouldn't have to go through a claim of exemption process. It would all work out very nicely. We've reviewed it with the creditors. There's no opposition from them. Second issue has to do with evictions for cause. There's lots of different kinds of ways to evict tenants. One way is a 30-day for-cause termination notice. That requires a 14-day cure period. In other words, the landlord says to the tenant, you've violated X, and because of that, your tenancy terminates in 30 days, but you've got 14 days to cure it. If that cause is a discrete act, such as a party, the notice, in essence, says to the tenant, you violated the rental agreement by this party, and you've got to stop doing it in 14 days. Some tenants take that as an indication that they can keep having that party for the next 14 days, or they keep threatening their neighbor, or whatever the violation is. So what we're creating here is an instant or an immediate cure requirement, that once the notice is served, the tenant can't repeat that violation. The cure is right then. And we're breaking up the 90.400, which is the eviction statute, into subsections, and requiring, for example, that non-payment of rent notices state the amount owed. It's been a developing theory in case law, but it's not in statute. It would be in statute for the first time. Should I keep going, or have I bored you all enough?
I'm curious about this second. Can't a landlord already have an agreement, like a 24-hour eviction notice for certain things they specify?
Senator Brown, Senator Shields, evictions are very well defined in statute, and 90.400 sub 3 is a 24-hour outrageous conduct notice. So if I'm Sean's tenant and I punch Sean in the nose, he could give me a 24-hour notice and evict me for abusing him. If I do something less than that, less obvious than that, if I threaten to punch him in the nose, he'd probably have to give me a 30-day for-cause notice for that. And under the way the law reads now, I could probably continue to threaten him for the next 14 days and then stop at the end of the 14 days and say, well, I'm cured, so you can't evict me. That's what we're addressing with the immediate cure requirement.
Madam Chair?
Sir, Franco.
Thank you. Is it defined what is for cause?
Yes. Senator Brown, Senator Ringo, for cause is defined in the existing law and in the new law to be violations of the rental agreement, which could be oral or written, or violations of 90.325, which is a statute that requires certain tenant duties like not disturb your neighbors, not trash the smoke alarm, not trash the apartment, and thirdly, payment of rent.
Thank
That's
you.
Cause.
Thank you.
Should I keep? Okay.
Sure.
Next issue has to do with the next two issues have to do with applicants. Right now, when an applicant applies for a new rental unit, the landlord is not required to tell the tenant why the landlord is turning the tenant down. Tenants, this is a big issue to tenants, since sometimes they feel like the real reason is illegal discrimination. Plus, if there's some problem, they'd like to learn what the problem is so that the next time they apply and pay an application fee, they will do better. There's also an issue of whether federal fair credit reporting requires giving the reason, but what we've done is negotiate with the landlords, and landlords have agreed to impose a requirement that when an applicant requests it, the landlord will give the tenant, the applicant, a written statement of the reason for the denial. And we've created a form. It's basically a box that the landlord can check off saying the reason is, for example, insufficient income or unsatisfactory references. The next issue has to do with...
Madam Chair?
Senator Ringo?
Is it sufficient to say you drove up in an old beater and we don't think you'd take care of your property and we just don't want to rent to you?
Senator Brown, Senator Ringo, you're asking for legal advice now.
Well, I guess there's illegal reasons, obviously, because it was raised, et cetera, et cetera. But what if you have the person drove up listening to rock and roll, and you say, no, I like country music, I'm not renting to somebody with rock and roll.
It's not illegal, Senator Brown, Senator Ringo, it's not illegal to discriminate against fans of country music. The example, I give a lot of talks, and I often say it's not illegal to discriminate against Oregon State fans.
Right, so you could put that in a letter and say that's why.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're thinking?
Yeah. We don't have a non-discrimination act. It's totally legal to discriminate because someone's gay or lesbian to deny housing.
Correct.
Thank you.
That's correct. As you, I'm sure, know, we have certain protected classes, but they're similar to the federal jurisdiction requirements. Some cities, such as the city I live in, protects on the basis of sexual orientation as well as, it's now considering transgender orientation, but it's city by city.
Thank you.
The next issue has to do with meth labs and abandoned property. Abandoned property is kind of a misnomer. It's property that's left, personal property that's left on the premises after the tenant can't be there anymore, usually by an eviction. Tenant can't go back onto the rental premises to get the property. We have already got existing statutes that regulate very carefully how a landlord provides that, returns that property, or cares for that property until the tenant gets it. Or if the tenant doesn't get it, it gets thrown away or sold. That conflicts with meth labs. When the state determines that a meth lab has occurred in a rental unit, the state posts the apartment and does not allow the landlord or the tenant or anyone into the apartment except for a state-approved contractor who is there at the landlord's dollar to clean it up. So the landlord in that case can't comply with the abandoned property statute, and what we're doing is providing an exemption for that and making it clear that in that case the tenant's going to have to negotiate with the contractor to get the tenant's stuff back. Tenants in these cases are not always the meth dealer. It may well be an innocent tenant whose bad boyfriend did the meth, or it may be a neighbor, because the meth contamination could be from a neighboring apartment, not just your own apartment. The last issue that I'll mention has to do with stipulated agreements in eviction lawsuits, which are referred to as FEDs. Most FEDs, especially in Multnomah County, are encouraged. It's probably too soft a word, but in Multnomah County, the judges encourage the parties to go out in the hallway and negotiate a settlement. That settlement agreement is enforceable. Over the years, this coalition has promoted settlement agreements because it helps tenants keep their homes and it helps landlords get what they want, which is usually the rent money. And usually a settlement agreement is the tenant pays X number of dollars by Y date and the tenant gets to stay there. Settlement agreements are, as a result of the process we've created, enforceable. The landlord can convert a settlement agreement, even though it's not a judgment, can convert it into a judgment by simply filing a piece of paper with the court clerk and starting the very quick 4-day execution process. The tenant can stop that process by asking for a hearing and saying, I did comply with the settlement agreement. The issue in Multnomah County is that so many tenants have learned to ask for that hearing that it's gumming up the works. And it's extending out how long it is before you get the hearing. It's messing with the court staffing and time, and it's discouraging landlords from doing settlement agreements. So what we're doing now in this issue is proposing to allow an ex parte process for judges to review the tenant's reason for the hearing. We've created a form. It lists the legal defenses. A lot of times tenants will write down on that something that has nothing to do with the legal defense. An ex parte process would allow a judge to make a facial review and say, no, this isn't, you, the dog ate your check is not a legal defense to that issue.
Okay. And the writs of execution is pretty self-explanatory. Any questions? Thank you very much for your work. We appreciate your time and energy on this issue. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2524A? Close the public hearing on House Bill 2524. If we can get Senator Ringo back, I'd move the earlier bill and this one.
I was going to send you another note, but it's too late.
I know. Ms. Cuneo left the room too, so. All right.
How does that machine work?
I don't know.
Amazing.
Austin, where are you? Chair would move into work session on House Bill 2524. I know that the Senate Republican leader is tied up. If there are any issues and he wants to revote on this bill, we'll bring it back. But my understanding is there's no opposition. Chair would move House Bill 2524 as amended to the Senate floor with due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none? So ordered. Good. Okay. We're in work session on House Bill 3047. Chair would move House Bill 3047 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. I think we would agree that this bill is overdue, long overdue. Any discussion? Any Senator Shields?
Simply, maybe we might wake some people in our own body up if we were allowed to use the testimony as it was shared in that electronic memes.
Mm-hmm.
That was startling. And would maybe sensitize the Senate better than any other methodology. And if you would consider that, Madam Chair, that might be a very helpful thing to do when this bill is carried.
All right. I would withdraw my motion. We have amendments, technical amendments. They are the dash one amendments to House Bill 3047. The chair would move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3047. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none, so ordered. The chair would move House Bill 3047 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. If we can get, we have the written testimony. I don't know if we can get the machine testimony, but we'll see if we can do that via recording or otherwise. Senator Shields, I do think it would be a really good learning experience. We have a Senate rule that prohibits folks from advocating bills and being on the Senate floor at the same time. Otherwise, we would invite folks to come join us the day we vote on the bill. Senator Shields?
I see some nodding heads that said that we could get some kind of recording of it, though.
Yeah,
I think
I'm
that
sure
would
we
be
can.
An amazing thing.
Okay. I do. Let's see. We still need to, there was no objection. Mr. Atkins, you want to vote on 3047 as amended? He's like, no. Okay.
How about I object?
All right. I don't think you want to do that.
All right. Then I'll hold on.
We can excuse you?
No, hold on.
Okay.
Where are we?
3047.
Kind of crazy snake oil bill.
No. It's a wonderful bill.
Changes the terminology.
I mean, you're okay?
I'll be all right with this.
All right. Okay. Chair would move 3047 to the Senate floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none, so ordered. Senator Ringo will carry 2524. Senator Shields to carry 3047.
Madam Chair, I apologize for my tardiness. How many bills am I carrying?
None yet. You're lucky.
But he gets the rest of them today.
Yes. Okay, let's go back up to the top of the agenda. Senate Bill 587. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about this bill? She's like, yes, you're right, whatever. Got a lot of papers here. Maybe. It's coming. It's here. We can. Where is it? Right here. Here. Right. Okay.
Senate Bill 587 requires the caption of a ballot title to indicate whether a measure revises the Oregon Constitution or amends statutes. It also requires that changes to Oregon statutes be grouped together under one caption on the ballot and changes to the Oregon Constitution be grouped together separately under a different caption on the ballot.
Saw Ms. Miller in the audience. Is she wishing to testify? Okay. Let me go to Charlie again.
Oh.
I know.
Where's Theodore?
Where's Teddy?
You want to do another one? We're on the record. Senator Farioli is tied up trying. Yeah, no, I don't want you to. I'm just, if you are interested in doing a minority report on this bill.
I'm always interested in doing it.
Okay, I will hold it until Senator Farioli is here. Okay, why don't you look at it. Ms. Lord, did you want to testify on Senate Bill 587? Why don't you come on up?
Good
Thank you, Chair Brown, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm the director of Common Cause Oregon. And we had testified on this bill once before. I'll try to consolidate my concerns on this. Sometimes a piece of statute needs an enabling constitutional amendment. And I think if those are separated on the ballot and or in the voter's pamphlet, that it's harder for the voter to discern the intent. And there are many cases where you'll have a referral and you'll need two pieces to it. So my concern would be for voter good information for the voter.
Okay. So that I'm just trying to think of a current example, SJR 2 and 841, if it was constitutional, that there be some reference in the voter's pamphlet that the two were tied together. Is that correct? Is that what you're looking for?
Chair Brown, yes. And also on the ballot, because the ballot, I think your bill, this bill has the ballot is going to actually have them separated.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
So this one. Cool economic development.
So this is my fair city.
Thing.
This is unincorporated.
I'm gonna just. Can you just put this on the record? That'd be very helpful, actually.
For the record, Madam Chair and Committee, I did discuss. This is Tiffany Harris, the Administrator. I did discuss this issue with Legislative Council, and what he explained to me is that it would be rare for changes to the Constitution to happen separate and apart from statutory changes. That would be the case with referrals, but with the initiative process, chances are very high that those things would take place at separate times, so that first you would have a change to the Constitution happening through the initiative process as a result of a vote by the people on the ballot, and then you might have subsequent legislative action the following year during the legislative session, so that you would avoid a lot of that confusion because those two steps would not be happening simultaneously. It is true that in the case of a referendum, that could happen. But the other point that Legislative Council explained to me is that that could happen in rare instances already under current law. And so if we want to enact something that is more broad sweeping that would address the very discrete specific problem of these sort of two-step votes that involve both a change to the Constitution and a statutory change, that would be achieved through a different vehicle.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Any other questions for folks? We're in work session. The chair would move Senate Bill 587 to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. The chair would like to address the issues that Ms. Miller has raised in another vehicle, and we have a number of them before the committee. So any other thoughts? Any objection to the motion? Hearing, seeing none, so ordered. The chair will carry. Let's move in work session on House Bill 2189. Ms. Harris, what do we have in terms of amendments? Mr. Hendricks, why don't you come on up?
We have a -4 amendment to House Bill 2189, and my understanding is that the -4 is a compilation or a consolidation of the -2 and the -3 amendments that were discussed the last time we heard this bill last week.
Mr. Hendricks.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks, Acting Legislative Counsel. In addition to consolidating the A2s and the A3s, there are also additional technical amendments requested by PERS that were made that were of a technical nature, trying to get the language a little bit cleaner for administrative purposes. I'd be happy to discuss anything else in these amendments if you'd like, although I believe you've had testimony before about the -A3s that covered most of them.
Thank you. We appreciate the information. Anybody in the audience needing to testify, wanting to testify, desiring to testify? Okay. Thank you. I think we're waiting for our additional committee member. Sarah, I can see you. Okay. Okay.
Where is he?
You don't want it on the record.
Maybe we do.
2059 is a no on it. Probably. I'm not huge. Are you okay? No.
The other guy is, yeah, just that side.
This one?
Yeah.
Or just the bearded guy?
No. Senator Atkinson, are you prepared to move forward on this bill, or should I move into work session on another bill while we're waiting to for Senator Shields? Okay. We're in work session. The chair would move the dash A4 amendments to House Bill 2189. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Chair would move House Bill 2189 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Ringo, why don't you carry that bill? All right, back up to criminal background checks. We're in work session on House Bill 2059. This bill was before us last week. My understanding is that there is a much broader, bigger bill coming over from the House. I believe the bill number is House Bill 2157. The chair would intend to move the bill, assuming it gets through the process. However, and rather be safe than sorry, we would prefer to move these individual bills as well, understanding that they may not be necessary. We're in work session on House Bill 2059. Do we have any amendments? No amendments. That's the A and gross version. I would move the A and gross version of House Bill 2059 to the Senate floor with a due mass recommendation. Any discussion?
You're going to be no?
Yeah.
Okay.
I said I'm looking for my notes, but...
That's fine. That's totally fine. All right. Why don't you do a roll call, Ms. Nielsen?
Senator Atkinson.
No.
Senator Ringo.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Senator Shields, will you please carry that bill?
I guess so.
Chair would open a work session, House Bill 2061. Ms. Harris, do we have any amendments?
Madam Chair, we have only the dash one amendments that were introduced last time we heard this bill on May 24th. We don't have any new amendments.
Okay. Which I don't seem to have.
Criminal background checks on chiropractors?
Yes.
We're crying out loud.
Oh.
That's what the nose sticker was.
We don't have amendments.
I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong bill.
Okay.
We don't have amendments for House Bill
2161A. Okay. All right, good, because I don't have any. It was amended in the House, however. Again, this is background checks, allows the State Board of Chiropractor Examiners to conduct nationwide. Again, the chair would plan to move House Bill 2157, which is the package deal, but until then would like to move these individual bills.
What's that?
Chair moves House Bill 2061 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Ms. Nielsen, will you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson.
No.
Senator Ringo.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Vice Chair Crioli. Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes.
You love the Rules Committee.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I think Senator Atkinson's no sticker got put on the wrong folder, and that explains a couple of votes. But I just suggest that might have happened.
Senator Atkinson.
I meet with people, and I write notes, and I'm sure there's somebody in the audience that's got to be mad at me, but I at some point I have to.
Senator Atkinson, I'm
conversation. I'm sorry.
I totally respect and appreciate your conscientious objections to these bills. Chair moves into work session on. I'll carry 2061. Chair would move to work session at House Bill 2102. We actually have amendments on this bill.
Yes. My understanding is the amendments authorize DHS and the Board of Nursing to work in an agreement to share the results so that we don't have duplicate efforts. Is that correct? Save costs, streamlining, et cetera, et cetera. All right. Chair would move the dash A2 amendments to House Bill 2102. Any discussion? Do you want to object to the amendment?
No.
The streamlining? Okay. All right. Hearing no objections, the motion carries. Chair would move House Bill 2102 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass. Recommendation. Discussion? Would you please call the roll, Ms. Nielsen?
Senator Atkinson.
No.
Senator Ringo.
Aye.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
And Chair Ferraioli. Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. I'll carry.
I'm punchy right now.
We're in works public hearing on House Bill 2739. Ms. Harris, what does the bill do?
House Bill 2739 directs the State Parks and Recreation Director to adopt rules that make state funding available to nonprofit veterans organizations to construct and restore veterans and war memorials.
I have, okay.
There has been a fiscal statement issued. You should have that in front of you.
Okay. Is it indeterminate? Okay. Mr. Fletcher, Ms. Crawford, are you here from Representative Bocas' office? Does Representative Bocas want to come testify? Okay. Do you want to come up and testify in his stead? We probably won't eat you alive. I think you're safe. Mr. Fletcher, why don't you come on up?
Don't count on it.
Mr. Kesterson?
Well, you better get back. You get the vote for one.
Good afternoon and welcome. Go ahead.
Okay. Chair Brown and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rachel Crawford, and I'm a recently returned combat veteran, as well as the legislative assistant for Representative Boglist. I'm here to speak on House Bill 2739. This bill allows nonprofit organizations to apply for grants to assist in construction and repair of veterans and war memorials on public property through the State Parks and Recreation Department. Basically, what I wanted to see happen was the Parks Department add nonprofit veterans organizations to their list of who is able to receive local government and heritage grants. I believe the Department of State Parks is in favor of this bill as well, as far as I know. House Bill 2739 is needed because the heritage of Oregon soldiers is growing and will continue to grow far into the future. Oregon is one of 10 states where 15% or more of adult civilian population are veterans, according to the U.S. Census Bureau report of 2002. According to information provided to the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, out of the 370,344 veterans in the state of Oregon, based on 2003 figures, over 275,000 have served in combat operations. That's not including those that have served from Oregon since 2003 in Afghanistan and Iraq. There are several reasons why a grant would be appropriate. One, the State Parks website states that the purpose of the Oregon Heritage Grant Program is to support projects conducted by nonprofit organizations, federally recognized tribal governments, and local governments in Oregon which conserve, develop, or interpret Oregon's heritage. Heritage means that it was passed down or inherited. If we don't take care of what others have done for us in the past, then it will be gone and nobody will remember the sacrifices that were given for our freedoms. Take, for instance, the Camp Adair historical markers. Those are in honor of units activated in Oregon that were deployed during World War II. They are in disrepair, and there may now be a great cost to fix them, as they have not received the care that they need. Most people realize that something will last for a long time if it is taken care of properly. Memorials have a particular importance in America today. They are about loss and sacrifice, but also about also about perseverance and triumph. They are places of solace and comfort where people can heal and remember. I am more grateful of America and the freedom that I have because of my military duty. Spending a year in Kosovo and then last year in Afghanistan, I have seen people in need of water, food, shelter, and money to survive, and yet they're happy because they're free. Too many Americans take for granted all the freedoms that they have. Most use their freedom to complain about the things that are wrong with their country, their government, their leadership, etc. I'm sure you've all gotten those emails too. Those that serve are called for duty, whether their president is a Republican or Democrat, whether the war was right or wrong. These are the sons and daughters of America, and who will stand for those who have not returned home? One of my friends that I was deployed with this past year, Joe Jeffries, was killed on May 29, 2004, near Kandahar Airfield, the base where I was stationed and all my missions were conducted from. Participating as a pallbearer during his ramp ceremony was one of the hardest things that I ever had to do in Afghanistan. Memorials that commemorate those who gave the ultimate sacrifices should be constructed and restored for fear that those soldiers be forgotten. Joe Jeffries left behind a wife and a child that will only see his father in a picture. Like many others, Jeffries is one of the many Oregon service members who have given the ultimate sacrifices, and those sacrifices continue as we speak. To deny them the respect that a memorial would provide is a disservice to the fallen service members and their families and to those who served with them. This bill does not appropriate money to any organizations, nor does it guarantee that those projects will be funded. It simply affords them the opportunity to competitively apply for the various grants that are available through the State Parks Department. As elected representatives of the people of the state of Oregon, I encourage you to consider this bill so that we may honor those who have served before us and those who will continue to serve long after we are gone. Thank you. Mr. Fletcher.
Thank you. I'm Herb Fletcher, representing the Korean War veterans and the Oregon Trail chapter. And I'm most happy to support this bill today. This bill is sponsored by Representative Boquist at the request of Rachel Crawford. And particularly in our case, we're a diminishing species, and 30 years there'll be nobody around that served in that war, and we would need somebody to maintain our memorial. If you've never seen it, it's in Wilsonville. Beautiful memorial to those who served and died in the Korean War, I think.
My name is Clay Kesterson. I'm the president of the Afghan Iraqi Freedom War Memorial. A proposed memorial to be constructed at the north end of the Veterans Administration building. I can only echo what these two people have said before me. The importance of memorials for not only the service people that are serving now, but those that have paid the ultimate sacrifice and their families. Particularly the families of those that we've lost need a place of honor and peace that they can go to and reflect on the price of freedom. And I would just urge you to pass this bill. We need these memorials more than I can say. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chair?
Sarah Atkinson.
How much more do we have on our calendar after this bill?
Only a few more bills.
Yeah. Could all three of you come by my office when this is over? Right after this hearing, which will be pretty quick. I'll show you something.
We actually just have one bill left.
If you'd all make your way up there, I'm on the second floor, S216. I'll show you something. All right, this is a great bill.
Okay. Thank you for your service, and Ms. Crawford, tell Representative Boquist you did him proud.
Yeah, we didn't need him.
Thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2739. My understanding from reading the fiscal impact statement is that we can just keep moving this proposal forward. The chair would move House Bill 2739 unless the Senate President tells us otherwise, that we move it directly to the Senate floor.
And so the chair would make that motion. And any further discussion? Any objection? Sarah Atkinson, would you like to carry?
I would.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Can we go to his office, too, or just people that he invites?
Can we just finish the last bill, please?
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2946. Ms. Harris.
Chair Brown. House Bill 2946A prohibits the Department of Transportation from including identifying information on disabled person parking permits, placards, decals, that kind of thing.
Welcome, Mr. Bennett. What is the problem we are trying to fix here?
Thank you, Chair Brown, members of the committee. For the record, Rick Bennett representing AARP. Actually, I received a message from a member who was very concerned about the fact that her driver's license number was on the disabled placard that hung in her window for everyone to see, and thought that with our many concerns about identity theft that this didn't seem to be right. I contacted DMV, and they indicated that was correct, that by law that was required. And while they had, you know, appreciated the concern, there was nothing that they could do about it, and that I should perhaps contact my legislator. Representative Hunt apparently thought it was a pretty good idea as well. Thus, you have the bill before you. It was amended over in the House to allow DMV to use four numbers of the driver's license that would allow them to still try to determine whether, in fact, the placard was being used by the appropriate person, but would still, I think, take care of the concern related to identity theft. There is no opposition in committee in the House, and I don't believe there is anybody voting against it on the House floor.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Bennett? All right. Anybody else wishing to testify on this bill? Thank you, Representative Hunt, Representative Farr, for sponsoring it. You don't need to come on over since you probably can't and you're on the House floor. That will close the public hearing and move into work session. Chair would move House Bill 2946 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Shields.
I had a really good conversation with Representative Hunt about some of the craziness that can happen here. And this is just an excellent bill. I mean, It's a perfect example of what you don't think about until you're confronted with it. And a lot of us are not, and excuse me, but we're using the wrong word again, handicapped. You know, even that word should be changed on all these spaces that we have reserved for people with disabilities. Posting their, I mean, I'd never thought of it, and I imagine none of us have. But there it is on display for the world to see their whole license number. You know, it's crazy.
So, anyway. All right. Thank you for your comments.
No.
I'm only going to vote yes if he leaves.
All right. So much for subtleties in the Oregon State Senate. Chair has moved the bill. Any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing. Wait a second, you guys, before you go. Hearing and seeing none. So ordered. Senator Shields, please carry. We had scheduled a work session on 1062. Senate Republican leader is not here. We're not meeting tomorrow. We'll carry this over until Friday or Monday. Monday. Well, who knows? Bye. With that, we're adjourned.
You know, I want to tack an amendment saying we don't.